Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the Outdoor Adventure Series podcast, where we celebrate individuals and families, businesses, and organizations that seek out and promote the exploration, stewardship, conservation, access, and enjoyment of the outdoors. Our guest today on the Outdoor Adventure Series is Ian Mackay, Executive Director at Ian's Ride. Ian is an outdoor enthusiast and accessibility advocate. He believes that nature is the best medicine and community is instrumental to an individual's success. Ian's Ride is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that advocates for more accessible outdoors by offering annual events for people with mobility impairments, demonstrating what's possible for people of all disabilities. Ian, it's a pleasure to have you on the Outdoor Adventure Series podcast.
Thank you, Howard. It's an honor to be here.
Fantastic. And I want to give a quick shout out to our friends at Rails to Trails. We had Kevin Belanger on our show, I want to say it was last year. And I know Amy Kapp, and I know you know Amy. And it's just been a pleasure to get to know them. And I want to thank Amy for making the introduction for you and I, because I thought this is a great episode and want to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm really appreciative of all the work they do, because, you know, rail trails are, are my jam. They're certainly something I can get out and really enjoy.
And fantastic. And, you know, what I'd love to do is to perhaps take a little bit of a trip down memory lane. We don't have to go real deep, but I'd like for our listeners to learn a little bit about you and your background. And I guess one question is, have you always been an outdoor enthusiast?
Sure. The answer to that is yes. I most definitely have always been an outdoor enthusiast, but let me give you a little bit of background. First off, I'm paralyzed from the neck down, so I'm a quadriplegic, and I was injured in 2008. I loved riding my bike. All right, I just enjoyed riding around town. I rode to college every day, and one day I was coming back down from UC Santa Cruz, where I was going to school, and it's a campus up on a hill, and I was going kind of fast down the bike path, hit some sand, went into a tree, and I broke my neck. Spent the next 3 months in a hospital kind of learning how to live as a paralyzed man. And then I spent the next 3 years at home. I had to move to Washington State. I'm living in Port Angeles now. And I had to move here because I no longer could live with college roommates. You know, they couldn't help a ventilator dependent quadriplegic. And so I moved with my family. For the next 3 years, I was lonely. You know, I'd left my friends, and I left my my education, my academic background, and really my community. And I was also then just trying to figure out how to live, without the physical means that I'd had my whole life. And it was bad. Yeah, a lot of time in front of the television, a lot of time playing computer games, until I finally started getting out a little bit. I live really close to a rail trail called the Olympic Discovery Trail. It's actually the westernmost section of the Great American Rail Trail. And I'm only about a third of a mile from there. And so I would go down, and I'd only go like a quarter mile at a time. And first I was really nervous because, I'm vulnerable. Like I said, I was vent dependent. I was on a ventilator 100% of the time until about a year after I was injured, when I did regain the ability to breathe. But I never regained the ability to cough, like to clear my throat. And so, problems could arise, and I need to be able to get help. And I really wanted to kind of explore the outdoors and on my own independently, be a grown-ass man and get out there and do the things that I love. And so I was fortunate that Apple, right around that time, released a new feature in their operating system that allowed me full control of a phone. And once I had access to a phone, then I had like this this tie back to home or caregivers, where I could call for help. And so then I'm out there on my own, and if I'm having a problem, then I could just call and someone would be out there. But I soon was going 3, 5, 10, 30 miles a day in my chair and just pushing the limits and seeing how far the batteries would last and how long I could last out there. And, once I'm starting to see the turkey vultures come in the summer up here, or seeing the first crocus bloom, it really brought me back into kind of the biology roots that I was going to school for back in 2008. And ever since then, I've really embraced that outdoors. It's where I found my solace after I was in such a dark space after my injury.
Fantastic. And one of the photos that I had picked up, I think it was either it was somewhere on the website in the blog. It was you and your mom standing. This is prior to the accident, yeah, in front of your truck. I think you were going to school to be a college instructor, teacher. Uh-huh. And your mom looks like a really enthusiastic type woman. And I'm wondering, did the relationship with family after this injury and knowing that I've got to find some way to get out, I just have this sense is your mom is like, honey, just do whatever you want to do, whatever makes you feel happy. Am I making something up here? But it seems like there's really a talk about a role model to have in your life.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, family's been huge, and especially in those early years, I had no one else to rely on, and they dropped everything to be with me. And I am extremely fortunate to have them. But I think what they saw at the time, especially those first few years, sure, my mom, but all of my family was not me. It was someone that had really done a 180 and had gone into this introvert space and not, spending time outside. And so they encouraged me to find anything that brought me joy, anything that really gave me a reason to wake up in the morning. And yeah, they really pushed that trail. And I said, no, I don't want to do it for years until I finally did. And I'm thankful that they did. Yeah. And, my mom is also, really loves to get out there, and she has, I think, a streak right now going of almost 2 years of not missing a day outside on her bike or going for a walk.
I think it's fantastic. And, obviously coming from in a background of just being an enthusiast, I mean, you can't help but meet great people who just want to be out there. And that's, you are inspiring to them. It's like, look, and by the way, you inspire me. Your mom now does because of, the streak. I didn't go out too much over the weekend. And now I'm really, I think I mentioned this when we were doing our discovery call. I need to get out, but I digress on that one. As you started to explore, get out, kind of get to your edge, where your comfort zone was, how did you begin to have this desire to keep going and then to build something that's pretty remarkable? Ian's Ride and this initiative, this project that you had, which I want to talk about, but when did this, switch start to flip for you? Like, there's something here.
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on it there, and you were talking about comfort zone, and in my opinion, life really starts when you're at the edge of that comfort zone, and that's kind of what I found when I first went out to that trail only a quarter mile away and rushed back home just in case something, was going to happen, as I felt like I was kind of pushing my limits, and I continued to do that for years after, and and yeah, I just think that we all need a challenge. We all need a goal. We all need targets to aim for, and getting out there and it's kind of pushing those limits and starting the nonprofit, doing some of these really big, adventurous, crazy rides that I've chosen to do. For me, they bring me joy. They bring me happiness. They allow me to be more involved with kind of a community, be it the trail community or my friends or family who are out there with me. But just just being out there and pushing those limits and kind of stretching that comfort zone, is what brings me joy.
Fantastic. How did Ann's Ride come about, where you were contemplating really something greater than just you? I mean, how did this start to come about?
Sure. So Howard, it all started more in selfish means. I mean, I'd been on that Olympic Discovery Trail and I'd covered every inch of it. And I'd done it so many times that I was ready for more. And so I reached out to a past cyclist friend. He was actually my chemistry professor in college, who brought me on my first bike tour. And I said, hey, I'm really thinking about riding across the state of Washington in my power wheelchair. Would you be up to join me over, 10 days or so? And he was like, okay, let's do it, and off we went. And so in 2016, I did this great 10-day ride from my home in Port Angeles, where I took a ferry up to Canada, and then I rode down to Portland. I got kind of a lot of notoriety for it, and I really was just out there to spend time with my friends. And we went to a brewery every night, and it was just a lot of fun. And being out there with my people I'm close with, and just talking about our day, or talking about what's going on in our lives, or just the surroundings around us, there is a real special thing to that. And I like I said, I got some notoriety and a lot of sponsors. And shortly after, a couple attorneys out of Seattle, it was called Nelson Boyd Attorneys, they approached me and said, we think you really should start a nonprofit so that you can be doing events like this year round. And they recognized that I am dependent on benefits, and I can't have income too much, but a nonprofit would allow me to fundraise and do interesting, cool things like this. And at the time, I was just thinking, oh great, I get to do another big ride, and cool, I get to show that off to the world, what's possible. But I didn't think so much that it was bigger than me, and the advocacy aspect. I was just trying to have a really nice time outside on the trail with friends.
I love that, and especially to enjoy the brew pubs afterwards. As so these attorneys arrive, they have this idea, and you kind of
I did not want to do it, Howard. I am like all break room and not board room, and I was thinking, this is going to be a lot of work, and I don't know how it's going to go. But I reached out to some of my other close friends who were also quads, who had their own nonprofits, and to heard about the benefits and the value that they've gotten from their organizations, and what was difficult and what was a lot of work. And after chatting with them, it seemed like it was the right idea. And that was in 2017 that we became a nonprofit. And since then, I mean, I didn't realize that the boardroom was soon going to become more comfortable than the break room for me. And now here I am, I'm consulting with companies, or I'm consulting with cities, or local parks, or playgrounds, anything, just to talk about outdoor access and the importance that has for all people, just to be able to get outside.
Yeah. Now, let's circle back, for example, to the Great American Rail Trail. It's pretty amazing. And there are sections of it that are done, sections of it that are they're yet to be done. How did that initiative begin to get incorporated into some of the activities? Because that's a logical steps. I don't know, maybe it's not the next step, but it's a couple steps away for, okay, let's do this. And then how do you begin to undertake that endeavor as the outdoor enthusiast, but also to consult with the local communities, the chambers, the visitor bureaus, the city themselves, to really not only plan this Great American Rail Trail, but also how do we ensure its accessibility, or even in the existing segments, how do we improve accessibility?
There's a lot of questions there.
Yes, Howard. There were. Yes, there were.
Let's see what I can get through. So, I mentioned in 2016, I rode from Canada down to Portland, and much of that is along roads. I mean, I'm trying to do it on trails as much as possible, but unfortunately, connectivity and trail links aren't, accommodating for cross-state rides. And I did another one in 2018. It was east to west from Washington. And then in 2020, I rode the Redwood Coast, and that was from Brookings, Oregon, down to Fort Bragg. I think it was like 230 miles or something, but that was almost entirely on roads, and I was on shoulders, and there are big logging trucks, and there is these rumble strips right along, and I wasn't able to sit and ride with my friends and talk about our surroundings and our life. Instead, we were hugging that shoulder and staying away from cars, and it was more of, I'm sure that this is possible, but it isn't safe, and I'm not sure I could continue to do this. I don't want to put my team at risk in any way. And sure. So after that ride and spending 10 days on the Pacific Coast bike route, it was beautiful, but it was like, okay, from now on, we need to focus on isolated, separated trails. And right then is when I reached out to the Rails to Trails Conservancy and said, hey, I would love to partner up, and I really want to start highlighting rail trails. Rail trails, just from the nature of the beast, you're not going to have hills. Surfaces are going to be varied, but you've got the infrastructure set aside or already there, and it's awesome if you can develop it in a way that maybe a road bike or a hybrid could do it. And if those can do it, then usually a power wheelchair can. And so being able to talk with Rails to Trails about the importance of the disabled community's user group. I mean, we're a valuable user group. We're the largest minority in the world. And providing infrastructure that we can enjoy is should be a given, or it definitely should be happening. But I often just kind of tend to team with cyclists, or at least advocacy for cycling, because the infrastructure used for bikes is often something that works really well for me.
Fantastic. Some of the conversations or consulting conversations that you're having in the, let's just use the Rails to Trails as an example. Yeah. There's communities that are still under development or perhaps need to be perhaps redeveloped a bit to make them more accommodating.
Yeah.
What's an example of one of those initiatives that you've worked on?
Just kind of removing obstacles, or at least creating access to. So yeah. One of the big ones is you were mentioning right before we hopped on this, the bollards behind you, right? You often have these barriers that are trying to just keep cars off of the trail. Totally understandable. I don't want cars out there. But you also really need to be considerate of wheelchair users, which also tend to be about the same width as recumbent trikes. All right. So if you're allowing space for those bikes to get through, those trikes, then I'll be able to make it through. Often though, they don't even use bollards. They end up using a rock or something, right? They'll put a big rock next to the trailhead to make sure no one can get through. And those end up often just being too damn narrow. And then it does prevent me from getting out there. So yeah, talking with people about making those changes, talking with national parks. I've been fortunate to work with Mount Rainier on their Paradise area and improving that, as well as the Olympic National Park. But right here in my hometown, there's Hurricane Ridge, beautiful access to the Olympic National Park. And they just 2 years ago paved like a mile and a half up this big hill that wheelchairs never could get to. And now I'm able to offer an event every year that brings people out there and allows them to go up there and have fun. So a lot of times I think it's just talking with agencies and organizations about You know, the little things. Please provide us the information we need at the trailhead. I don't want, you know, a big wheelchair accessible sign, because that means it's going to be ADA. What I want is to know, what is the steepest section I'm going to come across? What is the narrowest section I'm going to come across? How is the side slope? Just give me the info so that I can make an informed decision on whether I want to go out and explore. But often, you know, people aren't thinking about those things. And so just being able to offer those suggestions does seem to, you know, improve access in the outdoors.
No, I totally appreciate it. And being able to offer those suggestions or insights as early in the process as possible, because if we don't think about it, we don't think about it.
And why not build, right? It's a universal design object aspect. Just build for all people. And then you're not doing all this expensive modifications later on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier, you know, with the advent of this new smartphone technology from Apple, what's it been like to work with them or use their technology to aid you? And is this definitely like the go-to that you need to have?
Yeah, it's funny, Howard, how tech was really the doorway to the outdoors for me. I've been consulting with Apple, geez, for probably 8 or 9 years, and I've been working with them for the last 5. It's been amazing to have the ear to the company that provides so much of your independence. All right. And in 2019, I had the honor of being able to announce to the world on a national platform on a commercial for Apple, voice control. And it's just been this way to interact with your phone that you don't need anything else but your voice. And it's opened up the world for me, just allowing me to be a productive individual and still be able to spend time on the trail. I'm out there, it's just like a mobile office all the time. I'm just, you know, chatting away on a Zoom call, or I'm writing an email or whatever. And, you know, not being tethered in front of this computer all the time really is nice. Just being able to provide feedback and provide information to Apple has been really rewarding, and it's benefited my whole community, and I'm still, you know, every week talking with them to continue to improve the tech that's out there, because I know I don't want people to have the same problems I did when I was dealing with paralysis in the early days, and I just want those that come after me to have it easier.
Very good. And by the way, for what it's worth, Ian, I wish I was out there with you right now doing this podcast interview, as opposed to you're in your home. I have a nice, beautiful background, but it would have been more fun to be out on the trail with you.
It is snowing right now, Howard, here. So it would have been a little less enjoyable at the moment.
Maybe not. So a couple things that I'm now curious about. One, is I want to talk about this flagship event that you have recently completed. And I know you've got subsequent events being planned, but tell us about Sea to Sound.
Sure. This comes down to those long rides that I've gotten to do, right? I did Washington State twice and the Redwood Coast. And then just this year, we didn't really touch much on it, but I did the eastern leg of the Great American Rail Trail, the first 500 miles. Amazing. The Sea and O'Connell Trail is spectacular. The Great Allegheny Passage is something every cyclist should experience in their life. But I've had these monumental rides, these monumental experiences that have continued to motivate me and want to get other people to have, you know, similar experiences, because it's just so amazing to be out there with close friends and in nature and, you know, seeing what your chair can do and always having a little bit of risk, right? I mean, that's what life's about sometimes. And but I recognized, especially after my 2020 ride on the Redwood Coast, that it is resource heavy. You know, it's expensive. You need to have a community, you know, friendships around you, family around you that can, be on bikes or whatever. And also, a care team back at the hotel or wherever, as well as a SAG wagon. And it's just very, very challenging, and not everybody has these kind of resources. And so I racked my head over a way to let people have a similar, maybe not the same, but a similar experience. And I live right here, like I said, on the Olympic Discovery Trail, which is at least 75 miles of accessible space for people and shares to explore. And so what we did is we designed an event over 3 days that allows people to travel that entire 75 miles. And we have, a fleet of wheelchair accessible minivans and wheelchair shuttles to move people around. And we have aid stations every 5 miles. And we have, often like a cross country team or some Boy Scouts out there to help push if chairs run out of juice or a manual chair just needs help up a hill. But it's been a really special thing because we've created an event where others can get out there and have a very similar experience to what I've had on my long rides and be around like-minded individuals who also have mobility impairments, as well as the cycling community who get to be out there and interact with these, differently abled folks and kind of get to see that experience firsthand. And even better is the last couple of years, Invacare, a power wheelchair manufacturer, is our platinum sponsor, and they've been willing to offer several extra wheelchairs to us that we've been able to put some local lawmakers and policymakers into, right? So county commissioners, or we had the governor's advisor to outdoor recreation this year. But having able-bodied individuals who are, making policy and getting the experience of a day in a wheelchair can really help to, I think, advance outdoor accessibility in general. But it's been an amazing, amazing event, Howard, and just seeing the smiles out there and seeing people coming from from Vegas or coming from Ohio or whatever. It's made it feel like we're really doing something worthwhile. And yeah, all those smiles make it well worth it.
That's fantastic. It's interesting. You just mentioned Vegas, which is where I live right now. And there's the Las Vegas Astronomical Society, and they have events out on occasion near Red Rock Conservation Area. And there was a gentleman there who was, accessibility and had issues, and I think one of the things he had spoken about was trails that perhaps, like you just said earlier, had rocks in front of it. So okay, we're blocking the car, great, but now we've just made it inaccessible to the wheelchair. And so many opportunities to to kind of help out and wherever your locales are, because there's bike trails all over the place. And it's nice to see advocacy groups and as you also shared, getting the politician, the decision maker, to be in that chair to experience what it's really like. Now they're informed. They can help advocate for you.
Well, you're mentioning barriers. One of the most frustrating things along that Great American Rail Trail ride we did this past summer was we're on that CNO trail. It's 184 miles, and this is all dirt, single track at times. And, we came across a lot of barriers, mainly puddles and rain and stuff, or fallen trees. And, these are understandable. These are natural barriers. But about 110 miles in, we came across two stairs. There was two stairs on the trail. And, I mean, this is now a man-made barrier that was, every bike that comes along has to get off their bike and walk down these two stairs. And here I was, and there's 8 miles to the closest access point if I want to turn around, and I can't go forward because of these two stairs. We did find a way over that barrier, but it's just really irritating to me when we're designing things that are impediments to my enjoyment of outside, and especially when there's things like rocks, like you're mentioning, in front of a dang trailhead.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because that's another, shout out for why the conversations about accessibility need to happen, not as an afterthought, but as early in the thought and planning process as possible.
Yeah. I mean, have all users in mind when you're designing. It seems like an obvious thing to me, but I keep trying to hammer it in.
There you go. There you go. By the way, as you were talking about those trails, and you had mentioned on the website, the trail and at Columbus, that's one of the reasons why Columbus, Ohio is on my possible list of when I leave Las Vegas. Where am I going to go next? Because it's there. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. No, Columbus is great. And they have a pretty amazing trail network in their area. And I really look forward to going back at some point.
So I'm curious about the individuals who have discovered Ian's Ride, they've discovered you, and now they are participating because you've given them this, you know, this idea, this, that, oh my God, I can get out, I can enjoy this. And now they're a part of the clan, the family, so to speak. What's been the impact of meeting these individuals who now you've given them, you know, a reason to really get out there and enjoy themselves?
Yeah. Yeah. Howard, I feel like this Ian's Ride and, you know, my obsession with being out there would have fizzled out really fast if I didn't find others who were like-minded and also really enjoyed the adventure and being out there. And that's what has been the motivation of keeping us going, is the community that we've found out there. And it's sure, we have amazing Western Washington individuals who are out at the in-person Sea to Sound every year, and seeing the Olympic Peninsula through their eyes certainly reinvigorates me to be out there. However, we also offer a virtual option. So people that can't make it to our far northwestern corner of the country can also participate in their own way. And that's been really neat. And to see, we have a gal in Texas, her name is Ann Cruz, and she just completed her virtual her virtual Sea to Sound this past weekend, and she wants to do it in the same 3 days that we do. And she's out there with her family doing like 34 miles a day and charging halfway through. And but yeah, seeing that kind of enthusiasm for the events that we make, and you know, that she just really feels like she's found a family in our nonprofit, and found others who've created value about something that they've loved. Often, you know, it seems just like a silly thing to go out and spend the day putting miles on your wheelchair, but to normalize that in a way has kind of reinvigorated her.
Fantastic. Speaking of the wheelchair, I imagine they take a lot of abuse. I mean, just even if you were not out on the trail, they take abuse.
Oh yeah.
What's it like to, you know, keep it in, you know, good running order and making it accessible for the long haul of that trail?
So Howard, yeah, there's a couple different things we're hitting on there. First, I mean, we need equipment that's made for people's lifestyles and made for the outdoors. That's, you know, really important. If you don't have the initial equipment that can survive the stuff you're doing, then, you know, you're just going to be repairing all the time. But then that's the second aspect to this, is repairing. And unfortunately, you know, it's very difficult for people to get chair repairs right now. And there's supply chain issues. There's also, you know, just mainly two companies that kind of monopolize the market for chair providing and for chair maintenance. And, you know, those two are trying to keep their bottom line low, and that often means that the end user is the one suffering. And so let's say that you just need some new tires, or that maybe a cable broke. I mean, you maybe cannot move until that's fixed. It's often weeks, if not months, before someone can get out and fix that. And that's, you know, people are stuck in bed during that time, and that's really, really horrible. I've been extremely fortunate. Well, first, that I've wanted to really understand my chair, and that I want to be able to describe how to fix most anything to anybody. But I also have a stepfather who's incredibly mechanically inclined, and he is like my full-time wheelchair mechanic, which I need because of the regularity that I'm out there. But these are our legs, And you know, we're stuck without them. And that brings up another issue with like flying. So often flying, your wheelchair is gonna get damaged. And are you willing to take that risk when you get to the other end and you may not be able to you know, do anything but, you know, be set on a chair that doesn't have wheels.
I can imagine not all the airlines are accommodating in the same way.
They try. I mean, they do try, but these are 600-pound chairs, 500-pound chairs or so, and that is a lot to put on someone to be putting into it underneath the plane. And you know, there's strategies. You really try to charm and be friendly to those baggage handlers that are going to be dealing with your chair and make them understand the value of it and the importance of it to you know, just your well-being. But in my experience, yeah, if you do your due diligence, it is totally possible to fly without damaging things. But yeah, recognizing that people also just are reluctant to get out there on the trail. They don't want to beat up their chair any more than they have to because they're so reliant on it for day-to-day activities. And I, at the end of my Great American Rail Trail ride, I got to finish at Invacare up in Elyria, Ohio, and I got to consult with the manufacturer of my chair about the importance of creating equipment for people you know, who have all different kind of lifestyles. And I'm in Washington State, and I'm going to be out there in that snow and the rain later on today, and I need a chair that that can handle it. And I'm very fortunate that they're creating one that works for me, and I want to continue to encourage manufacturers to keep providing that kind of equipment for all users.
You know, that would be a great conversation on the podcast. And by the way, I don't know if I told you when we did the discovery call, I'm a very opportunistic podcaster, always looking for the next conversation. But you know, I don't tend to interview manufacturers, product producers, but that'd be a great conversation to hear about what they're doing, because you know, you are in some ways an outlier. I mean, you're not the typical user of their equipment. And now you're helping them see something that maybe there's an opportunity there.
But am I an outlier just because, you know, people don't recognize what they can do?
Right.
And that's really what I want to try. I want to do whatever I'm doing. I want to make sure and demonstrate what, you know, what is possible for those out there, and encourage everybody to push their limits. Because just because, you know, we're mobility impaired doesn't mean we don't like adventure.
And I think that's the opportunity, is to open up folks' ears, eyes, minds for that, their mindset that there is opportunity here. And just because life has dealt me something that's pretty extreme, I can still get out there and enjoy myself and be happy, be hopeful.
Exactly. But also making sure to acknowledge that there are tools that we require to do that, and encouraging those manufacturers to continue to provide those tools so that we can live our best lives.
Very good. Very good. By the way, when you mention your stepfather, I can imagine you two could have your own YouTube channel where you're talking about how you're repairing these and keep and maintaining these chairs.
Yeah, you know, it might be useful for people too, just kind of a clinic on how to repair, you know, day-to-day stuff. The problem there, though, comes down to often like voiding warranty. Like if you're not letting their techs do the work, then, you know, they could say that you damaged something. And it's just a frustrating world out there, but you got to navigate it.
Yeah, one time you lift up one rock, and then you got another rock you got to lift up. It's unbelievable. Yes. So what's next with the Sea to Sound? And it's, you're continuing this event. Any new insights, ideas that you have planned for the next round?
Yeah. So next year will be our fifth annual. So you know, we're hoping to make that a little bigger than usual. And there's things that we would like to do. We would love to start kind of like a scholarship program, so that you have these folks in Texas or throughout the nation who couldn't afford to do this, or if out of reach in some other way, and to find a way to get them up here to participate in person. I think that would be really, really significant. But we've also just had to include a lot of other little fun things. Not everyone can do 20 to 25 miles a day. And so to have kind of like a midway stop in the middle where maybe we're having lunch, but to have some live music, to have someone face painting, or have like a ice cream truck there. You know, those things that really, I don't know, they bring some charm and make it a little bit more special. So continue to expand in that way. And, you know, just it's really been a lot about continuing to develop relationships with the community, who are sure financially sponsoring us, but then they're out there participating as well, and they're on their bikes and they're helping push a wheelchair up a hill, or they're helping run an aid station, but then they're really kind of getting involved with the disabled community, which I just do think just makes us a richer community in all the entire neighborhood.
I love it. Now, before we head out, oftentimes during our shows, we have a couple of, highlight opportunities. One is called the aha moment. And I know we've talked a lot about this event, the Sea to Sound. And, you know, I'm curious though, what was your aha moment for this event after the launch, after this first event? What was going through your mind then?
You mean after that very first year?
Yeah.
Well, it was trying to take a deep breath, because it was just a lot to manage over that first 3 days. But really, as soon as I did catch my breath, I had to recognize the joy that we had created for so many people out there. And, you know, sure, the folks in chairs are having an amazing time. But what I didn't expect was that the folks on bikes, the runners, that they would be benefiting more than almost anybody. And how much people get from being asked for help. You know, I mean, it's funny, it's really hard to ask for help. But so often, you know, people feel amazing once they're able to, you know, just help someone out. And it gives that opportunity out there. But I think once it was all done, it was like, okay, how do we make it bigger and better next year? How do we get, you know, let's get some feedback. Let's send a survey out to everybody. Let's find out what we can improve. And we're on to something, and let's just keep making it better.
I love it. During our prep for the show, you fill out a questionnaire for us. And for this next segment, the Insight to Go is an opportunity to share with our listeners something about this journey you have been on. And this could be a quote, a song that's been written that just kind of really just resonates for you. And what would you like to share as your Insight to Go with our listeners?
I almost forgot. I almost completely forgot about that. that survey. Yeah. Okay. So there is one little piece of media that really has always inspired and motivated me. And it is a song by Guy Clark, a Texas country singer who passed away during the pandemic. And it's called The Cape. And what's really cool is the Cape, it's just a song that kind of follows a child growing into adulthood and then old age. And, you know, the chorus is about how he would continue to, you'd jump off of his garage with a flower sack cape around his neck. And the actual chorus is, he's one of those who knows that life is just a leap of faith. Spread your arms and hold your breath and always trust your cape. And then the very final line is that he did not know he could not fly, so he did. But for me, I found that this is a great metaphor for drive and perseverance and not giving up. Sure, it can seem ridiculous. Of course, you know, jumping off a garage with a flower sack cape isn't going to be successful. But I think that you have to keep trying. You have to keep pushing. You don't need to focus on your limitations, but focus on what you can do. And, you know, for me, know, sure, I can't ride a traditional bike and then get out there, but I have found ways to have similar experiences. And maybe I did not know I could not ride, and there I am. I'm out there.
Very good. Well, you know something, there was this quote, and I know I'm gonna botch it up, but in the arena, which is part of a speech by Theodore Roosevelt. And it dealt with, you know, there's always people looking outside the arena of what you can or cannot do, but it's people that have been in the arena who are doing it. So whether they're bloody, dirty, scratched up, they're in the arena. And so what I love about this conversation and meeting you is you're in the arena and you're making a difference in people's lives. And, you know, people like me, people that have similar constraints like you have, and there's other disabilities, but you're giving people hope. And so you're in the arena making things happen. Appreciate that.
I appreciate those kind words. And I still just feel like I'm out here doing things in a selfish way to spend more time with good friends outside and share those experiences with others.
Well, I do know, and I find myself saying this to many of my guests, is I'm going to find some way to meet you in person, whether it's on the trail or after the trail with the beer, but well, I'll figure out a way to do that. There's a wonderful photographer, young girl woman up in the Northwest, just a wonderful outdoor photographer. Yeah. And so I have to make it I can come visit you and I can go visit Izzy. So
there we go. A twofer, right?
It's
there.
A twofer. It's a twofer. Yeah. Now, before we head out, Ian, if our listeners would like to learn more about you and the work that Ian's Ride is doing, where are the best places for them to go?
Yeah, of course, Howard. So first, iansride.com. You know, that's always going to have what we're up to and what's gone on recently. And you can always donate there as well. But you can also follow us on all the standard social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And you can find us there just by searching Ian's Ride.
Very good. Well, we will provide the backlinks back to the website, iansride.com, as well as to your social sites. And I know you shared a number of the media resources where you have been highlighted, and we'll have links back to that as well. And for our listeners, on Ian's Ride is the shop, the store, and there is merch. And I want to say thank you, Ian. There is a t-shirt there that I'm going to be ordering, and it will fit me. So thank you so much for that. You thank you for thinking of me, this guy who needs to be losing some weight, and I need to be out every day walking. So thank you so much.
I hope we cross paths one of these days, Howard.
Fantastic. Well, listen, stay in the line. We're going to do a quick close, and you and I can have a final chat. It's been great.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay, folks, what a fantastic episode today. We had the pleasure of chatting with Ian Mackay, outdoor enthusiast, accessibility advocate, and executive director of Ian's Ride. And what we have learned today is a lot really about Ian's journey from just, you know, being happy-go-lucky and just enjoying life at its best. And then a curveball hit and Ian found himself to be disabled and really continued and discovered his love and need to be outdoors and just to enjoy his surroundings. And just, you know, the fortunate that up where his family lives, there's this wonderful trail and he could get out there, the Olympic Discovery Trail, and really kind of reinvent himself, because I would imagine what he thought he was going to do is a little different today. And he's making a difference now, not only for, you know, others who have similar disabilities, but also giving people hope that they can get out and explore and enjoy life to the fullest like Ian is doing. Now, do go out to Ian's Ride. This is a 501c3 nonprofit, and you can find them on iansride.com. You can also find them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we're also going to provide some backlinks to some media resources. As for us, you can find us on the outdooradventureseries.com. We're also on LinkedIn and Facebook. And you can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast, whichever platform we are there. Just search for outdooradventureseries.com. And before we head out, I do want to share, we're going to have a short video segment little snippet of this video we'll have up on our Outdoor Adventure Series YouTube page as well. Okay, folks, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, go out there, have a phenomenal day, and we will see you on a future episode of the Outdoor Adventure Series podcast. Take care now.